Hi, my name is Juliet, and I'm the host for this podcast. I'm going to be ordained a rabbi in January, which is very exciting. And in Judaism, there's a specific portion or reading, we call it a parsha, from the Torah, which is the Hebrew Bible, for every week of the year. And as we go through these readings week by week in order, from the beginning of the Torah to the end, from the beginning of the Jewish year to the end, we analyze these stories and we comment on them. Of course, connecting them to real life, to contemporary life, and to the issues that abound is how these ancient stories come alive, which is one of my great passions as a rabbi. I hope you'll accompany me as I tell these stories of Torah, of my life, and the lives of others. And if you miss an episode, you can always go back and find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for coming on this ancient and contemporary journey with me. And you can always go visit my website, lenegditamid.us. That's LNEGDITAMID.us. LN as in nincompoop, and M tamid as in mostly fantastic. And you can find out about all my offerings as a rabbi, spiritual director, et cetera, et cetera. And please, though I give these podcasts freely, donations are always welcome. So on to the parsha for this week. Bechukotai. Love the earth. Love moss. Do you love moss? I love moss. I've always loved moss. And learning about moss is like, to learn how amazing it is from a scientific point of view in terms of the earth. The tactile part of it. I've always been attracted to moss. Maybe everybody is. I don't know. But whenever I see it on rocks, I just stop and I just want to sit in it, sit on it, touch it, feel it. Anyway, enough about moss for now. Back to groundedness in New York City. The other day I was talking to a neighbor, friend, and I told her about the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, ERAP, that was created in New York State during the pandemic. Incredibly helpful to many people, including my family. I'm so grateful for it. So my neighbor was really happy to hear about the program, but soon she moved on to the subject of personal responsibility. And she complained so bitterly about people taking advantage of the system that is supposed to help hardworking people. She told me this story. First, she was like, oh, these people have four kids and they can't support them. And then they take handouts instead of going out and getting a job. I don't care. Even if it's at McDonald's, let them go to work. And her point was, of course, that people need to learn to live within their means. And I tried to veer the conversation off the individual towards the systemic issues that plague our society. I reminded her that McDonald's doesn't pay enough to cover anybody's rent. Forget about one child. And I didn't even mention child care. I left my job as a teacher 30 years ago temporarily to stay home with my daughter, my first child, because my salary as a teacher, all of it would have gone to child care. All of it would have gone to paying somebody to take care of my baby. $500 a month, that's what I was taking home. So to imagine going to work at McDonald's, I mean, it's ridiculous. I didn't say that. I didn't go into it. She was too upset. And the fact is that's still true, that most of people's salaries go to childcare. When they go back to work, women. And I really wonder, I know that people do it for the health insurance, and luckily my husband had a job and he had health insurance through his job. So I didn't need to work for the health insurance. And that's actually my neighbor. That's why she's working still in her 60s. She could have retired, but she's working so that she doesn't have to pay the astronomical bill of health insurance. And as we know, sorry about my voice, a lot of people do that. I mean, it's ridiculous in our country. Anyway, she's told me this whole long story about this. You know, she was like, 30 years ago, I was in the supermarket and this woman came up to me and I was standing in line to pay for my groceries. And she came up to me and she said, "Can I pay for your groceries?" And she said, "Oh, no, I'm fine. Thank you." And then she was like, no, "Can I pay for your groceries with my food stamps and you give me the cash?" And she got so angry. And this is the story she was telling me, you know, like, "I'm not paying for you to go and buy drugs and blah, blah, blah." And then she went on to, you know, so here I was trying to be like, well, you know, yes, that's so true. And I really commiserated with her. Like, that's awful. But, you know, what about the systemic issues? What about, I didn't say the word systemic. Maybe that was my problem. Maybe that was that was where I went wrong. I don't know. But she was not responding at all to anything I said. She was like, "I pay my taxes so somebody else can go buy drugs by trading their food stamps for cash. My mother worked 3 jobs so she could feed us." And then she was like, "Okay, let me get down off my soapbox." She was like, "I'm getting too upset. I don't need to get so upset." But anyway, you know, her pride at her mother, you know, working so hard. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. And I wish that for every struggling person. We should all have pride, no matter what. We should try our best. But to hear her talk the way she did, it made me really sad. I felt so sad after we hung up and I was trying to figure out why. And then I was talking to another friend and she was like, "Oh, well, it's a reflection of this indoctrination, which has been so incredibly successful this indoctrination of millions of Americans to take the blame for being poor." And I'm sure it started way before. I mean, obviously we know in Christianity, I mean, that's a huge thing. It's like, you're supposed to suffer, right? So this is nothing new, but our government has continued it. And people have always, I mean, I was hearing another podcast yesterday and about the author of Red Badge of Courage, who lived in the early 1900s. And he was a journalist also. And he found that all these people, there was like 30% unemployment at the time. 30% in New York City. And all these newly unemployed people, they weren't angry at the rich. They weren't angry at the government. They were just bewildered. This was fascinating. This was on the media. So if you want to hear that one, it's called Again and Again. It was fascinating because they weren't angry. They were just like bewildered, he said. "How could I have messed up? Like, how did I get out of the game? What happened?" You know, as if it was their fault and not the system's fault. I mean, it's so deeply ingrained in us. And when my neighbor was talking this way, it reminded me of the Bush presidency years when George W. commended a woman who came on stage with him and told him, "I'm working 3 jobs." And he was like, "Oh, that's amazing. You work 3 jobs." And it was like so disgusting. Where was the question of government responsibility? Where was the awareness that no one should have to work 3 jobs just to make ends meet? And these comments, they take responsibility off the government for the very poor job it does in taking care of the residents of this country. And our taxes should be to make sure that everyone gets their basic needs met. We're all paying taxes, right? And we think they're supposed to, you know, they're supposed to take care of people. They're not supposed to go to weapons of mass destruction. And I mean, obviously there are people who believe that that's more important, but I don't. And I think it should be a reciprocal relationship, especially in a country with such wealth as ours. If we pay our taxes, we should be getting health insurance for everyone. Just like in Europe, we have the capacity to do that. But no, they cry poverty. The government cries poverty. And it's an abuse. It's abuse of the tax system in our government, by our government, and among rich and poor alike. I mean, we know that rich people like Donald Trump abuse the system, and not just Donald Trump, abuse the tax system all the time. And this abuse is rampant. And yet we focus more on the poor. So talking about abuse, then there's abuse of our land. And in this week's Parsha, Bechukotai, this is where I'm going, okay? I know it sounds like a very roundabout way. I'm talking politics. Let me get down off my soapbox. In this week's Parsha, Bechukotai, it continues, the Torah continues with the laws that we're supposed to abide by as a people if we are to have our needs met with enough food for all. And it says that God will walk among us if we listen. But if we don't, we will have pestilence. We will be so hungry that we eat our own children. This is a really hard parsha to read. And we will be constantly on the run, though no one is pursuing us. Oh my God, when I read those lines, I was so struck. I was like, oh my God, this is where we are. We're living with widespread pestilence, the pandemic, so many people continuing to die. And now I heard about this new monkey virus. I have no idea what that is, but it's like so much pestilence, constant fear. The news, as they talk about on the media in this particular podcast called Again and Again, it's like the news perpetuates this and makes us, by constantly reporting on the worst things that are happening in the world, all the crime, all the it makes us feel like the world is a much more dangerous place than it actually is. I mean, take the subways. You know, like we're hearing about all these attacks on the subways and guns and stuff like that. It's true. But I just read a statistic this morning that said, actually, it's no higher than it was before the pandemic. And yet we're living in constant fear. So this, not to mention, and it's not to diminish the amount of crime and the you know, the rise in homelessness and the rise in, well, you know all of that. You know, the rise in poverty since the pandemic, of course. And I see it with my own eyes. Have they thrown people out of the hospital, people who are mentally ill, they can't afford to even keep them. Those people are not cared for. And yet our tax dollars are supposed to go to things like this. And now let's get on to eating our children. Well, you know, that was when I was like, oh no, we're not eating our children yet. Though that has happened in history, where we, you know, but we're eating our children's future away in our abuse of the earth. We're eating our children's future away. The Parsha goes on to say that the land will no longer yield because we have not followed the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, the sabbatical, and the Jubilee. Therefore, the land will ultimately take its sabbatical, its Shabbat, its rest, simply by not yielding. Finally, the earth will regain its balance, and God will remember the covenant God made with our ancestors. So, on to Moss, which I started with. I was listening to On Being, Krista Tippett, and I heard botanist Robin Wall Kimmerer. She is a Native American botanist in New York State, professor, all kinds of things, writer. And she was talking about the intelligence of plants. And she says that we could learn a lot from plants and their particular intelligence. We're not to anthropomorphize. We're not pretending that they have, that they think the way humans do. They have an incredible intelligence. If you saw fantastic fungi, you would know. And maybe you know already. Maybe you've already heard about this. But she talks especially, she's an expert in moss. And she says about moss that being very small, moss is very poor at taking resources for itself. So it is forced to stick together, to cooperate and help each other. Each little plant that makes up moss, it's an individual, and they stick together really closely. And because it takes up very little space, she says, moss is a great example of how to live within your means. And I'm talking about society. I'm not talking about individuals, although, of course, as individuals, we could learn from that. Also, though moss is made up of tiny organisms, mosses make huge contributions to us and the earth. For instance, they filter and conserve water, and they prevent soil immersion, soil erosion. That's only a few of the things that moss does. And these are so incredibly important. And we as Homo sapiens have tried to have dominion over the land. There's that word that was in the Bible. It was translated that way. And we thought that the Bible told us this was our right. We're supposed to have dominion over the land. But that hasn't worked out so well, as we're seeing now. And those who have inherited our Bible are reevaluating, especially I've heard that that's happening in the Christian world. I think Krista Tippett, that's what they were talking, that was one of the things they talked about, she and Kimmerer. And they're reevaluating. Did it mean that we should exploit the earth by taking as much as we could, stripping it bare until it wouldn't yield anymore, depriving our children of their future? The answer to me is clearly not, or those who interpreted those lines about dominion didn't read far enough. Or maybe they chose to ignore the part about allowing the land to rest. As usual, the Bible has been misused by the powerful to manipulate the weaker for personal gain. And I'm going to end with this excerpt from Kimmerer's book called Braiding Sweetgrass. You can find it on her website. Again, Robin Wall Kimmerer, double M, but you'll find her. Braiding Sweetgrass is the name of the book. And I found this particularly poignant. She says, "We are all bound by a covenant of reciprocity. Plant breath for animal breath. Winter and summer. Predator and prey, grass and fire, night and day, living and dying. Our elders say that ceremony is the way we can remember to remember. In the dance of the giveaway, remember that the earth is a gift to pass on just as it came to us. When we forget, the dances we'll need will be for mourning, for the passing of polar bears, the silence of cranes, for the death of rivers, for the memory of snow." And the comment that Kimmerer made about this with Krista Tippett was about this passage. She says, "One of the things I had to learn was the transformation of love to grief to even stronger love, and the interplay of love and grief we feel for the world, and how to harness the power of those impulses." So I want to leave us with a blessing that we may learn to harness the power of the love and the grief we feel for the world, our beautiful earth, and may we remember our covenant. And may we say amen. Thanks for being with me this week, and I'll see you next week. Shabbat Shalom, an early Shabbat Shalom. It's only Tuesday. Okay. Bye.